the glass and left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Yell. Aguilla's rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
Jones up the left side. Shoots. Miller the same. Rebound. Furland raw by Miller. Nastijan. Score!
Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Matty Rose starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hour one underway on this January 17th Monday edition of Flames Talk. Find us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, and more. And Maddie, we're getting set for another Flames and Florida Panthers showdown on Tuesday night. Another home game with half capacity. I sure am hoping that there's only a few more of those like that. Sure am hoping when we get inundated with home games come February that maybe we're talking about things a little bit closer to normal and maybe back to full capacity at the Scotiabank Saddledome. But it's the Panthers in town. Right now, in fact, they're in Banff. How about what the Florida Panthers are doing? They're in Banff today. They practice there. They're staying overnight in Banff tonight. And then Tuesday, they're doing a morning skate in Banff before busing into Calgary for the game that night. That's what the Panthers are doing. Flames are trying to snap out of their slump. They've lost four straight in regulation. They're 2-7-1 in their last 10. Oh, and that's right. It was January 4th. The Panthers started this current losing streak with a 6-2 win in Sunrise. But I thought Eric Goodbranson had a really good quote after practice today. The Flames, at least according to the defenseman, sounds like this group is pretty fired up to play Florida and maybe get a little bit of revenge on Tuesday night.
We've been working and been looking at ourselves in the mirror quite a bit and thinking. And, at the end of the day, we need to come out tomorrow with a big effort. And I'd say most exciting part about this whole week is the opportunity we have tomorrow to play, arguably the best team in the NHL and challenge ourselves for that after, a week of practice. So we're excited for that.
I want to see, Matty, how the Flames come out against the Panthers on Tuesday, because one thing I know is they cannot get sucked into their game like they did as the last game in Sunrise went on. The Panthers were the one that chose how that game was going to be played, and the Flames kind of obliged and said, sure, yeah, we'll play this way. Problem is, Panthers are better at playing that brand of hockey than Calgary is. And I want to see how much better Calgary is in sticking with their brand of hockey. And even if they're not dictating, don't get baited into playing the way the Panthers want to play, because that's not a recipe for success when you take a look at these two teams and how they match up.
Yep, certainly isn't. You got to make sure that you're defending hard, playing that rush well. The Panthers play with so much speed, so you got to make sure you're managing the neutral zone and your gaps in transition, keeping the front of the net clear to make Jacob Markstrom's night, assumedly, as kind of, pain-free as possible would be another thing I would look to. Managing the way that Florida plays in the offensive zone with their high-to-low play, how can you manage that and stay out of the penalty box? That'll be a big one for me, too. But I totally agree with you. You can't let the Panthers kind of dictate pace. This time, you're on home ice. You can dictate a little bit as far as the matchups go and that type of thing for the Flames. So you got to use that to your advantage when you can. I think the team is very aware of the opponent coming in. It was a pretty fun game against the Panthers just 2 weeks ago. Obviously, it didn't go in the Flames' way, but you're looking for a little bit of a tighter game if it goes the Flames style, per se.
This schedule is just a mess, though. So
a mess.
Like, it's ridiculous. They played on a Friday night in Carolina, then don't play again until Thursday. That was the 4-1 loss to Ottawa. Then they don't play again until Tuesday. Then they don't play again until Saturday. It's not until after Saturday's Battle of Alberta in Edmonton that things start to return to normal. And then look out come February. We're going to hit this a little bit later on Flames Talk and definitely into hour two of the show, but that schedule in February, I don't know opponents, but I've gotten a glimpse from a couple of league sources as to the dates. It's like, holy, buckle up. February is going to be a ride. There is going to be a lot of hockey played at the Scotiabank Saddledome in what was the Olympic break. So it will get back to something more resembling a normal NHL schedule and even resembling like a very busy NHL schedule. But right now, How do you get in any type of rhythm? And the Flames are not the only team that are dealing with this, Matty, but it must be difficult on any NHL team, especially when you're struggling to get things. Like, you didn't want to play again. You got beat by Ottawa 4-1 on Thursday night. You want to play again. You got to sit and think about that loss until you play again on Tuesday. Oh, and then you got to play the NHL's, you know, best team or one of the NHL's best teams in the Florida Panthers. And from a just from a fan standpoint, like, how do you get engaged? It's like an NLL schedule right now.
Huh. Yeah, it's like they're playing a CFL, like, week-to-week type of thing. You get your 5 days to get the bumps and bruises and do the different days of the practice week. But, yeah, for like Eric Branson said it in that quote that we played, and I think that rings true. You had a lot of time to kind of look in the mirror and look at the tape and realize that a lot of the things that we've seen from this group over the past week or so, well, that's not really fair, a couple weeks, few games, has strayed from what we were used to at the beginning of the season. And I think that, you know, a lot of talk about the Oilers and how Ken Holland keeps saying that the solution is in the locker room. I think it's pretty similar with the Calgary Flames, especially when you look at a really solid sample size earlier on in the year for this group. There's a lot of, I wouldn't say room to grow, because we know what the potential is, but there's some room to get back to that baseline that I think Flames fans and the coaching staff and the whole front office would like to see from this group. But it's going to be one of those things where, you know, right now for these last couple weeks, all we end up talking about is how much time there is between games. And, you know, the calendar is going to turn to February, and we might find ourselves going, boy, wouldn't it be nice for these guys to get a couple of days off and kind of give their heads a little bit of room to breathe. So, you know, it's part of this challenging season that it is. Obviously, the NHL is doing all they can to keep the kind of end of the schedule in April so that from next season we're getting back to normal time. But it's crazy to be in January, be about, what, 40, 45% through the schedule. Like, it feels like we should be so much further along. And I think that it's starting to wear on a lot of the players and the groups involved. So we'll see what they come out with on Tuesday's game. But I'm expecting a pretty fired up group to hit the ground running.
It's too bad Florida's coming to town and we're only going to see half capacity Tuesday at the Scotiabank Saddledome, because it means it won't quite be as fun with the return of Sam Bennett. He'll finally make his return to Calgary Tuesday after last season's trade to Florida in April. He was suspended for that January 4th game, and Sunrise was serving a three-game suspension at the time, so didn't get to play against his old team that night. Will get to play against his old team on Tuesday at the Scotiabank Saddledome. He joined the Eric Francis Show, which you hear every Monday at noon here on Sportsnet 960 and wherever you get your podcasts. And He talked a little bit. Eric asked Sam about why it didn't work out. And I remember Sam was asked, like, the day of the trade in April, why it didn't work out for him. And that was one thing, right? So now, fast forward to all the success he's had in Florida, a little bit of time to reflect on the last 8 months and maybe why it didn't work out. Here's Sam Bennett on why things never worked or didn't work out as well as they could as a member of the Flames.
There's a lot of factors. I mean, there was, I think after a certain amount of time, I just got put in a role and never really got the opportunity to succeed in a top six role, where I'm playing right now. So I think I just kind of got put in that position, and that's where I was stuck with. So, sometimes that happens, and that's just the way it is, and then you just need a fresh start.
So that's Sam Bennett. The entire interview, it's about 16 minutes long. It's part of the Eric Francis Show, which is part of the Big Show podcast. So on the Big Show podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts, you can go check out the entire interview with Sam and Eric Francis. And, you know, I do think Sam has a point in that. I think part of why it didn't work out or never worked out as well as it has in Florida is because opportunity wasn't there. Opportunity wasn't granted. And when opportunity was given to Sam, it was never, on a long-term enough basis, you know, whether it be different coaches from Glenn Gullitson to Bill Peters to Jeff Ward, did not matter. It seemed like Sam got an opportunity. He'd play in a top six role, get two or three games. It wouldn't work, or it wouldn't be instantly successful, and he'd be moved back into a bottom six role. Or he'd get a couple of games at center, and it wouldn't work out, or an injury would happen, or the team wasn't doing so well, and they moved him back to the wing. So I think it wasn't just the lack of opportunity, it was the lack of consistent opportunity or time for him to show what he was all about. I really do think, as we have seen what Sam has been able to do in Florida, I do believe that there were some significant mistakes made in developing him. And I think even candidly, maybe not publicly, but I bet behind closed doors, even those with the Flames would say, yeah, we probably could have done things different in bringing Sam along. But I still think there is a significant amount of culpability or responsibility that needs to be pointed at the player's side as well, because I don't think his camp, and it's tough for an 18, 19, 20-year-old guy to do this. I fully understand that. I was the most immature piece of garbage as a 20-year-old. So, like, I fully understand. I couldn't manage anything at the age of 20, let alone, you know, manage being a fourth overall selection, the highest pick in my franchise's history, all that type of stuff. But I do think there could have been, from his camp and just from the overall Sam side, better expectation management. And that expectation management, I think, would have helped in, you know, when he was moved around, or when offense was not coming, or when, you know, whether it be agent or player or family or whatever, you know, when it felt like the opportunity wasn't coming or other players were getting more opportunity than he was. I'm sure there was some of that. I do think some better management and expectation management would have been important too. So do I think the Flames made some mistakes in Bennett's development? 100% I do. I also think there needs to be some responsibility. Is not even the right word, Matty. I think that part of why it didn't work out is also on Sam's side. I don't know how I would break down the percentages or the 50-50 split or whatever, but I do think there were multiple reasons on either side as to why it never quite worked and definitely did not work the way it has in Florida.
Well, for me, the expectations are tough because, you know, his first 12 games as a member of the Flames, he didn't necessarily put up a ton of points, but 11 of those were in the playoffs, and he was very noticeable in that 2014-2015 shortened playoff run with 3 goals in 11 games, annoying the heck out of Kevin Bieksa and the Canucks. So I think that the expectations were pretty high for Sam Bennett coming in, and then he just didn't really show that he was able to kind of live up to it consistently in the regular season. And I think some of that is on Sam, like you mentioned. Some of it's certainly on the Flames as a whole, because I look at what he's doing in Florida, and I think one of the biggest changes is I would look at him more as a centerman rather than a forward when he was with the Calgary Flames. It was kind of, here's a few games at center, we're back to the wing, didn't play well at center, so we're going back to the wing, and just there wasn't that consistency to really try and grab onto a position, like something that Elias Lindholm dealt with before he was finally kind of put to the middle and stapled to the middle. You know, he struggled with that as well, flip-flopping between the wing and the center position and just the responsibilities that come with that. So I think that's been one of the benefits for Sam, is he's been pretty much a centerman since he arrived with the Florida Panthers. And like he said, he's had opportunity in their top six, and most of that opportunity has been beside Jonathan Huberdeau, who's been one of the best centermen, one of the best left wingers in the game this season.
Best
if
forwards,
not
period.
The best, you know. Yeah, he's been one of the best forwards straight up. So I think that when you have someone like that on his left side, it creates different opportunities for a player like Sam Bennett. And in his time in Calgary, there was perhaps what you would look at as a bit of a logjam at the center position. Sean Monahan was there. Michael Backlund was pretty much the second line center for the entire time that Bennett was here. And got some look in the middle, but maybe it's in a third line role. Or like you mentioned, he's filling in for someone who's hurt, and then when they return, it's right back to the wing for him. So, you know,
if you remember correctly, and just to pick up on that, Like in so he burst onto the scene in the playoffs in 2015. The following year, he played a good chunk of that season on a line with Michael Backlund and Michael Frolik before Matthew Tkachuk was drafted. And then they missed the playoffs in the 15-16 year. And they go get Tkachuk, and it did not take long in Tkachuk's rookie season for him to get put on that line with Backlund. And
3M
the 3M line was born that year with Backlund playing with Frolik and Matthew. And so this is no knock on Sam, but at that point, you know, Matthew Tkachuk was a higher end player. And you know, he was at that point he was better suited for that spot. So it was another instance where, you know, they, not like it was a slight, and it was like, no, Sam, we don't want you. We have no desire to give you opportunity. It just, somebody else came along, and there was Matthew Tkachuk, and he was a really good fit in that spot on that line. And now all of a sudden, Bennett's opportunity to be in the top six got pushed down, and now being into the top nine, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And then what do you kind of do from there? You're trying to get more ice time year in and year out. Like, I look at his ice time as a member of the Calgary Flames. It was anywhere between an average of 13 minutes to, at highest, 15.09. His 2 years with Florida, he's averaging over 18 minutes of ice time. So he's getting a ton more work. He's out there with the elite players. He's getting lots of power play time as well. He's just being given more responsibility and running with it. And I think that was something that this organization was maybe a little bit afraid to see what would happen if Sam Bennett had a little bit more responsibility, and to give him an extended look with a little bit more on his plate. So there's a lot that goes into it, but unfortunately it didn't work out here. I think that for Flames fans, it's been fun to watch him, you know, flourish.
Has it been
Florida
fun?
Panthers.
Or has it been painful?
Minus the one. Well, you know what? It's one of those things where I look at it and I'm like, okay, well, maybe now with how this season's going, you think what it could have been if he replaces Sean Monahan in the middle. But I kind of like seeing him succeed. He was a player I enjoyed watching. And I think the Flames did all right in getting a decent haul back for him. I understand that it's probably not easy to watch for a lot of Flames fans, but at the same time, it's the highest pick. Watched him kind of grow up here in town, and maybe, who knows? Maybe it never does work out here because the Flames don't have someone who is Jonathan Huberdeau.
Well, I don't.
A couple of Leaf left wingers, but they don't have a Jonathan Huberdeau.
I don't think it was going to work out here. I really don't. I think that when they made the deal, ship had sailed. More on this later on this hour on the Daily Flames Roundtable. But yeah, I thought the ship had sailed at the time. But I think there is a large portion. I don't know how large, but I think there is a sizable portion of Flames fans that are really frustrated as to what he's doing in Florida. And seeing him be in Florida, what so many Flames fans hoped he would be when they drafted him fourth overall, and the fact that it's happening somewhere else and not happening here, that's no knock on Emil Heinemann or whoever they pick with the second round pick in the 2022 draft. But, you know, I think there is a solid group. And again, I don't know how many or what the percentage is, but there is a group of fans that would be frustrated. And I understand the frustration. I do. I think you're right to be frustrated. It just, I think there were missteps on both sides along the way, and here we are. He's flourishing in a new spot. And it's funny because you take a look at the text line whenever we talk about this, or you take a look at Twitter whenever you write about it or talk about it, and it's pretty split. It's like, no, Bennett never worked here, and when he was given opportunity, he never did it. And I see a few of those texts on the text line, and there are others that say the Flames never gave him a chance, and this is on them for it never working out. And I just don't think it's a either-or scenario. I really do think that it is a situation where a number of factors contributed it to it never getting off the ground the way everybody hoped it would.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. At least he's in the East. Like, is that a solace that you could take if you're
probably
not happy with what you're seeing right now? Like, at least he's not in the Pacific or the Western Conference even, so I guess that's a bonus, but yeah, I think I said it at the time of the trade. He's probably going to be a really good player for the Florida Panthers. And lo and behold, he went there and he lit it up right off the bat. and then this year, lighten up again. So I don't think that we can be surprised. You know, he does play on a very good team as well, a very deep team. So there's a lot that opponents are trying to handle when they face the Florida Panthers. It's not like you just look at it and you say, okay, we got to handle Sam Bennett. No, there's a lot of problems on this Florida Panthers roster.
And let's finish. Let's finish here this segment with our favorite topic these days, and that's the Edmonton Oilers. More on Sam Bennett in a few minutes on the Daily Flames Roundtable. We'll get into a conversation again about him, and you know, I think I've got a fun question to throw at you guys on the Daily Flames Roundtable. But let's finish on the Oilers. What an absolutely brutal collapse on Saturday. 3-1 lead after 40, an opportunity to get back on the winning side of things on home ice. And you lose 6-4 to Ottawa. And I fully realize the Senators also came in and fed the Flames their lunch a couple of days prior. So this is not taking pot shots at the Edmonton Oilers, but they are 2-10-2 in their last 14 games. It has been a dreadful, dreadful yuck stretch. Here was Connor McDavid after the game on Saturday. The Oilers have lost 12 of their last 14.
I'm not sure what to tell you. You know, obviously, it's been a long layoff, and come in and you know work ourselves to a 3-1 lead and give it away.
So you guys are playing with a lead, which is where you want to be. What do you think fell out of your game? Was it just a little bit of mental lapses there, or was it something as a group that you think just there was a lull?
I wish I had an answer for you there. You know, we're rolling along. We get a couple chances early. We don't finish them. We give up a 2-1-1, and you know, and then it's
Connor, I know it's not the playoffs for losses, but when you consider, you know, where you're at, you had a 10-day break. You're 2-9-2, and you're up at home. It's 3-1, and then you lose to a 30th place team. It's one of the most frustrating regular season losses you've had.
It's definitely up there.
You know, I really want the Battle of Alberta. Our good buddy Reed Wilkins in Edmonton calls it the pillow fight of Alberta when it's not very good. And well, right now the Flames are 2-7-1 in their last 10. The Oilers are 2-10-2 in their last 14. They meet on Saturday. I want the Battle of Alberta to be something again. So this is not me taking pot shots at the Oilers. It's really not. But I'm kind of done with the painting of McDavid as a victim. You know, like the whole, oh, poor Connor, you know, like,
oh, poor Connor.
He has to suffer in Edmonton. Did any of what you just heard there, like, say to you, yes, that guy inspires leadership. That guy is bringing his team on his back. And maybe I'm cherry picking because I'm still sour about that Evander Kane BS that he gave us last week. But I don't know. There's something there that it's like, is that the guy? I know he's the highest paid player on the team. I know he is the most supremely talented player on planet Earth right now. But I don't know. Like, is what you just heard there, does that... I get it that he's frustrated. I get it that he's sick of losing. But I don't know, like, is that the guy that you're saying, yes, hop on my back. Connor's got us right now. Maybe I am cherry picking. I don't know, but I did not come away from Saturday night with the loss and then listening to McDavid and watching McDavid in that news conference afterwards saying, he's got this. 97 is going to dig him out of the hole.
Yeah, no, I don't have a lot of room for kind of sympathy, I guess. Like
would you ever hear that from Crosby or Bergeron, or you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. Maybe I am cherry picking.
Like, I obviously his mood and his emotion seems like it couldn't get much lower right now, right? Like these two past press conferences of note, obviously the one following the Senators game and then the one where he was asked about Evander Kane. Like, that's a bad look. He looks so defeated. He looks like he just, like, can't wait for this entire media availability to be over. And I don't think the players are ever really excited to talk to us in the media, but it's a little bit different the way that, you know, he'll start going off on a tangent and then he'll stop himself. So, like, there's the clip where they ask about what went wrong, and he's like, well, you allow a 2-on-1, and you can tell, like, he knows what else started to go wrong, but he's like, well... if I continue down this road, I'm just going to bury all of my teammates. So rather than that, I'm just not going to say anything and just kind of move on. And I don't know, what is the best kind of course of action there? To bury your teammates? Probably not. But, man, these shrugging your shoulders way too much, you know, kind of 8-9-word answers, it's not a great look. Obviously, like, what's he supposed to do? I think he's doing about as much as he can. I kind of, you look at that entire organization, doesn't have a lot of help, minus whenever he's on the ice. So it's tough for Connor, really tough for Connor, but I'm not, you know, jumping through a wall for this guy after I see these two media avails for him. Like, by no means, certainly not.
And again, I know that if you say anything bad about Connor, 780 area codes and Oilers fans jump on you right away. But I don't think that he is the innocent victim in this whole thing anymore. I'm not saying that he is a problem. I'm not. I just think that he needs to be more of a part of the solution here. I really do. Anyway, we are live this afternoon alongside Matty Rose. My name is Pat Steinberg. It's Flames Talk from the Iconic Studio, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Currently hiring in Calgary and across Alberta with competitive wages, extended benefits. Visit iconicec.ca/careers.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Matty Rose. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Sam Bennett and the Florida Panthers in town Tuesday for a 7 o'clock faceoff against the Flames as Calgary will play their second game on home ice after their COVID pause. Second game in front of half capacity as well, as hour one of Flames Talk continues on this Monday. Bennett joined Eric Francis on the Eric Francis Show, which you can find on the Big Show feed wherever you get your podcasts. Want to play you this clip because Bennett talked about his final stretch as a member of the Calgary Flames before being dealt in April of 2021 at last season's trade deadline, and admitted he was not expecting to be traded at the deadline, despite the fact he had a trade request that was more than 3 months old. Here's what Sam told Sportsnet's Eric Francis on the Eric Francis Show.
When I was playing under Daryl, I loved it. I really liked playing for him. He was giving me a lot more opportunity, and I was really happy actually playing under him for sure. I thought, you know, things were turning around for me for sure. And I didn't think I was going to get traded at the deadline after Daryl came in.
Oh, is that right? Because it seemed like it was trending in the right direction.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I knew there was still a chance, but it seemed like I wasn't going to.
So the entire interview with Sam and Eric is on the Big Show feed, wherever you get your podcasts, on the Eric Francis Show Mondays. You hear it live at noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. So you just heard that, gentlemen. It's time for the Daily Flames Roundtable. Pat Steinberg, Matty Rose, and now the radio voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills. Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Always improving to be better for every guest on the lot. Leave your review today for Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, minutes from the airport. Just heard Sam say he was a little surprised that the trade ended up happening, especially after he was starting to find a groove under new head coach Daryl Sutter. Sam had 6 points in the 6 games prior to being dealt to the Florida Panthers. We all know hindsight's 20/20, but knowing that, gentlemen, did the Flames make a mistake? Should they have held on to Sam Bennett at last season's trade deadline?
Well, it's interesting, Pat, because the last one-on-one that I did with Sam Bennett for our pregame show, I asked him if circumstances changed and if he was given an opportunity to play more minutes and to play in an increased role, if he would consider staying with the Flames short-term or maybe even long-term. And he said no without saying no. There was a long pause before he answered that question, and you can tell the answer was no. Hearing that today is really interesting. And I did think that his game had started to trend in the right direction. 6 points in his last 6 games. So, you know, he left Calgary and went to Florida with some confidence and with some momentum, and kind of picked up where he left off with the Flames once he joined the Panthers, and then probably took it to a whole new level. And we saw some playoff Sam Bennett in the regular season, and then more of it come the postseason. I wouldn't say it was a mistake. for the Flames to trade him, because it did feel last season like it probably had to happen, both for the player and for the team. But as you guys know, I was a huge Sam Bennett fan. I also understood the frustration that the fans had and that the organization had, that there were such high highs, especially come the Stanley Cup playoffs, and then such low lows. And you just didn't know which Bennett you were going to get on a night-to-night basis in the regular season. But for me, he was one of those guys who found a way to elevate his game when the games got hard. And the Flames didn't have enough of those guys last season. And I do think that by trading him when they traded him, I wouldn't say they sold high, but I think they sold high given everything that had happened to be able to get what they did from the Panthers. So sometimes players just need a change of scenery. And I think that, after some up and down times with the Flames, Bennett was probably a player who needed a change of scenery. And it's easy for us to sit here now and in hindsight say, well, maybe they should have let it play out for the rest of the season under Daryl Sutter to see if it worked for the player and if it worked for the team, and then you go from there. But again, hindsight is 20/20. I'm happy for Sam because I like him as a player and I like him as a person, that he's found a home in Florida and has really thrived there. And it's too bad, because I think the Panthers' Sam Bennett is the guy we thought the Flames were going to get when they drafted him fourth overall back in 2014. And we saw that guy sometimes, but not all the time. So I'm not going to sit here in hindsight and say it was a mistake to trade him.
Yeah, I'm kind of wishy-washy on should the Flames have held on to Bennett, because you look at the contract he ended up signing with the Florida Panthers. He gets 4 years at just under 4.5, 4.425 per. Now, granted, that's down in Florida, so you have to assume if he was going to sign up in Alberta, where the taxes are significantly different and you've got a lot more kind of attention on you, that price probably would have gone up, maybe get a little bit closer to five. So then you look at the Flames and you say, well, where did that money end up going to? And it went towards Blake Coleman. And you know what? They're different players. Blake Coleman is a veteran player who has won two Stanley Cups, and I think that's something that the team coveted at the time, and maybe they felt like they had a shot at getting Blake Coleman when they traded Sam Bennett, and that was part of the kind of cap gymnastics that they understood they would have to go through to kind of either retain him or create this kind of new player that's going to be on the team. And you had to make that decision. And the 6 years, I think that it hadn't worked out for Sam Bennett, minus a few kind of stints where he kind of lived up to his potential. So I understand the direction that the team had to go at the time. And I think looking back, it would have been really hard to get him to kind of stick around. Granted, the changes with Daryl had happened, and perhaps that would have changed his mind a little bit, like you heard in the comment there. But it looks to me like the Flames kind of had to pick if they were going to make some roster changes to the core that a lot of people had been clamoring for a little while, with kind of the lack of playoff success we'd seen with this core over the last couple of seasons. And this seemed like a move that kind of made sense, moving out someone and getting someone back who, can do some similar things in Blake Coleman. And you also get some pieces back, right? Like, we don't know what Emil Heinemann is going to be, and draft picks are lottery tickets essentially, but the Flames have picked some good players in the second round. Dylan Dubé was a second round pick, Rasmus Anderson, Oliver Shillington, second round picks. And to have success in this NHL with the salary cap, you have to have guys on ELCs and RFAs who are, contributing at a lower price point. And when you bring in things like that, that gives you an opportunity to try and do that for the next couple of seasons. So I think, revisionist history, it would be nice to say, yeah, well, if we could have what Sam Bennett's doing now this year, that would be great at 4.425. But I honestly don't think it would have been possible. So, yes, I do think the Flames should have traded Sam Bennett.
I get it. Like, I fully understand being frustrated if you're a Flames fan. Derek, you said it best. Like, this is what people thought he was going to be when they drafted him fourth overall. But yeah, I still think it was two reasons. I don't think it was going to work here. I don't. I just, even though it was trending maybe in a better direction just before the trade, as I mentioned, 6 points in the six games prior to him getting dealt to Florida. And I do think under Daryl, there could have been some improvement, but I still don't think it was ever going to get to that level with Sam here. And number two, Don't forget about the expansion draft, because now all of a sudden Seattle is looking at both Sam Bennett and Mark Giordano, and now all of a sudden the Flames are potentially exposing two players that they like. So, and now it's not as much of a slam dunk that Seattle goes after Mark Giordano, and maybe Gio's still here. So I still think, knowing that they were looking at a situation and Sam was definitely eight of the seven forwards they were going to they were going to be looking at protecting, I still think making the move was the right call. I do. So yes, I do not think they made a mistake. I still think they should have pulled the trigger on the deal that they did.
Yeah, and if I'm the Kraken, I probably take Sam Bennett, because
so now you're getting now you're losing him for nothing.
Yeah, exactly. So I really think that it almost had to happen, and it's a shame, because again, we saw such high highs with Sam Bennett in playoff runs where they had guys who not only did not elevate their game, they weren't close to being as good in the postseason as they were in the regular season, but year in and year out, you could count on Sam Bennett to take his game to another level. Beast mode Sam Bennett, playoff Sam Bennett, whatever you want to call him. But it just didn't seem to work, at least not consistently enough during the regular season. And you know, I think you both make a great point. It's not like they gave him up for nothing. You didn't lose him for nothing in the expansion draft. And I remember prior to him being traded last year, we were having conversations on the air and off the air about, okay, what can they get for Sam Bennett? And a lot of people thought they would get max a third round pick. Well, they got a second round pick at a pretty good prospect who I actually asked about a couple of weeks ago when the Flames played the Panthers. And I'm told that Emil Heinemann could be in North America as soon as next season. They're going to see how the rest of this season goes, but he's a Zach Hyman type of player. I'm not saying he's going to come here and be Zach Hyman, but that's kind of his ceiling. And that's kind of how he's built as a player. So, you know, if the Flames get a guy who ends up playing in the NHL, whether it be with that second round pick or whether it's Emil Heinemann, then maybe it's a trade that works out for both teams. But, you know, I'm happy for Sam, because I really enjoyed dealing with him for six or seven seasons, and you know, having great conversations on the air and off the air. And I wanted him to go somewhere where he would succeed. I will say this though, guys, I'm really glad they didn't trade him to a team in the Western Conference, a team that the Flames would have to play a minimum of three times a season, if not four or five times a season, and then again, potentially in the Stanley Cup playoffs. They trade him to an Eastern Conference team they see twice a year. They're only going to have to play against him once this year because he was suspended for the first game. So I'm glad the Flames don't have to face him on a regular basis, that's for sure.
Daily Flames Roundtable Tuesday. It's Calgary and the Florida Panthers from the Scotiabank Saddledome. He's Derek Wills. He's Matty Rose. My name is Pat Steinberg. Topic two on today's roundtable. I'll just throw it out there point blank. What would you do about Calgary's third defense pairing right now? Because it has struggled over the last few games.
Yeah. I mean, I leave Eric DeBranson on the right side of that third pairing, but Nikita Zadorov, we just talked about Sam Bennett having high highs and low lows. Nikita Zadorov has had some of those this season as well. And I think there's a lot of upside there. His size, the way he skates for a big man, I think he's got some skill. He can be really difficult to play against. There's a lot of good things there, but there have been some games where you look at your broadcast partner, you kind of shake your head wondering what's happening there. I would think long and hard about putting Michael Stone in. I mean, the guy has been such a consummate professional over the last couple of seasons, and I think you know what you're going to get with Michael Stone. There's not a lot of high highs or low lows with him. He's a guy who I think you know exactly what you're going to get from him on a pretty regular basis. I think that if Michael Stone shot left, he'd have a lot more than two games played this season, because I think you could put him on that pairing with Eric Gudbranson, and you'd have a lefty in Stone and a righty in Gudbranson. And again, it would be one of those pairings with a couple of big guys who can both skate pretty well for big guys, who can be really tough to play against, and who are really reliable defensively. And when I think about what I not necessarily want, but need from a third pairing, I need that pairing to be reliable in the defensive zone. Anything I get from them offensively is kind of a bonus, to be honest. And Zadorov does have the ability to chip in offensively, but I don't necessarily need him to do that. But what I do need from that third pairing is for them to be consistent and reliable defensively. And there's been some ups and downs there, more so with the guy on the left than the guy on the right. But again, coaches love lefties on the left and righties on the right. So that's probably why we haven't seen Stone more than just twice this season. And if Yusuf Alamaki doesn't get hurt playing down in the AHL, maybe you recall him from the Stockton Heat and see if he's ready to kind of grab that number six spot or number five spot, whatever you want to call it, and run with it. But that's not an option right now. So for me, it's either you leave Zadorov in there, so you've got a lefty on the left side of that third pairing, or you play Stone potentially on the left side of that third pairing on his offside and deal what comes with that. But I guess the short answer to what was already been a long answer is I would probably play Stone now just to give Zadorov a chance to reset and then try that again and then figure it out from there.
Well, what they should have done was given him a left-handed stick 2 months ago to work with in practice. No, I say that in tongue-in-cheek. But I think that right now you kind of got to hold on to what the third pairing is. I listened to Nikita Zadorov's comments from yesterday. I thought he had a nice media avail where he really laid out what went wrong in the last game. And that tells me that, like we heard from Erica Branson, these guys, they've taken a lot of time kind of looking in the mirror, looking at tape and saying, okay, I need to be better here. I thought what he said about, you know, we need to be a defensive pair. Myself and Erica Branson are a defensive pair, and that's what we need to focus on. Now, the question is, will that carry over into actual gameplay? Because it's great to say it in an avail 2 days away from playing the best team in the NHL, arguably, but can you carry that over? And if not, you probably have to look at maybe bringing somebody in, because I think that putting Michael Stone in to play the left side on a consistent basis isn't necessarily fair to him. I don't think that you're kind of putting him behind the eight ball to start. I think, you know, spot duty when needed. And if anything happens to any of the right side defensemen, I like Michael Stone going in, playing a little bit consistently there. But I'm a little wary of the right-handed guy playing the left side with a pair that's kind of struggled a little bit already. So I'd probably look at maybe trying to acquire someone from the outside. There's quite a good crop of UFA defensemen coming up this year just on the left side alone. If you want to go real big game hunting, there's guys like Ben Sherrod or Hampus Lindholm, Mark Giordano. If you want to go maybe a little bit slower or smaller, pardon me, Calvin DeHaan or Brett Kulak, Forever a Flame returning from Montreal to kind of make me give you a different look. But that's kind of where I'm at right now. I would give them one or two more games to try and implement what we've seen them talk about. And if that doesn't come to fruition, I'd be getting on the phone if I'm Brad Treliving.
Yeah, I'll make it real quick, guys. But I think you can do a few things right now. Maybe you can go Stone. Maybe at some point Yusuf is healthy and he could return, and that could be an option for you. But I honestly believe that the best call here is, I do think an acquisition is the way to go. I really like the idea of Sherratt, but I also think that might be a pricey acquisition, but I sure do like that idea. So I do think whether it is a number five or a number six, I think adding one more body is the way to go, because I don't know if you're going to get where you want to go with exactly what's on the roster right now. That's what I would do. There's plenty of time between now and the trade deadline, but that's definitely what I would be looking at.
I bet you the text line's blowing up right now, because I've seen it on Twitter for the last couple of days. Fans getting angry, thinking that Brad Treliving might just add a depth defenseman between now and the trade deadline. And I think it's always a good idea to add a depth defenseman, because if you're going to make a long playoff run, you're probably going to need seven or eight or even nine defensemen to help you do that. But for me, the Flames have bigger needs right now than to add a third-pairing defenseman. I still need to have another look at Yusuf Alamaki, not only for this season, but for next season, because he did sign a two-year contract, and I'm still not convinced that this guy's not going to be a top-four guy in this league. Hopefully he gets his game to where it needs to be once he gets healthy down with the Stockton Heat, and then comes back up to the Calgary Flames and never plays another AHL game for the rest of his career. And I really do think that is a distinct possibility. And you've got another good young defenseman in the system in Connor Mackey that I think was maybe not close to being NHL ready, but didn't look out of place in this league when he played in some games over the last couple of seasons. So, and I'm not really thinking ahead to next season. Again, it's never a bad idea to add some depth on defense, but I do think that the Flames have some options between Michael Stone, who is healthy and chomping at the bit to play, and Yusuf Alamaki, who will hopefully be healthy sometime soon and maybe ready to take that next step. And if not being a top four guy, then at least a top six guy who plays every night. And Nikita Zadorov, again, there's been some really good stuff with him. I just need to see some more consistency. And if he gives that to the Flames, then I think they're going to be in pretty good shape back there.
All right, Mr. Wills, have yourself a wonderful rest of your Monday. We'll talk to you on a game day on Tuesday ahead of the Flames and Panthers. Thank you, sir.
Sounds good, guys. Have a good night.
He's Derek Wills. He's Matty Rose. My name is Pat Steinberg. Your Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Always improving to be better for every guest on the lot. Leave your review today for Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, minutes from the airport.